everyone, welcome. You're listening to another new episode of NMPC Plus. For those that are uninitiated or just dumb, my name is Josh. I'm one of the pastors here at Mercy Palisades Church. We're starting off pretty strong here. Got a lot of Diet Coke in me right now. And I am joined by Pastor Bobe. Hello, Pastor Bobe.
Hi.
She wants to distance herself from the opening. And I'm joined by Pastor Key. Hello, Pastor Key.
We're not re-recording.
No, we're not going to. We're absolutely not. We're not going to do it again. No, nice. Absolutely
hello,
not.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today? Aside from my terrible intro just then, how are you guys doing today?
Feeling very smart.
What about you, Pastor Keith?
I'm
you doing
feeling good. Just the weather has been so nice.
Yeah.
It's been putting me in a good mood every day.
Really beautiful, really great weather today.
Yeah.
I basically live at the driving range right now if I'm not playing golf. So, Pastor Bobby, you just remarked that I'm dark. And I'm gonna get much darker by the time the end of the season comes around. So, watch. If you're watching online, just wait till like September.
Nice.
And I might be a completely different person. And then I might have that hat tan line. And I already I have the farmer's tan. So yeah, I don't know. This is the golf life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of this past weekend, I went out with just a few buddies. The JV golf team got together this past weekend. And we went and played an entire weekend of golf. And can I just say, we're the JV golf team for a reason.
Oh, boy.
We love golf, but we're the JV golf team for a very good reason.
That's hilarious.
In any case.
Oh, I should have joined.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully next time. Next time we can get you out there. We went out to Crystal Springs. Which is really just a terrible, 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 terrible golf course.
Yeah.
So punishing. It's beautiful,
yeah,
but it's punishing.
I mean, not that I was inviting myself, but just the whole
being No,
being with JV people.
No. Invite yourself.
That makes
it's
sense
okay.
For
You're
me.
Coming. You're coming next time. What's new? Anything new since the last time we got together?
I can't remember.
It's been a week.
I moved out of my apartment.
Oh.
Yeah. I did that.
So you went from your apartment to where again?
Back to my parents' house, which is...
Wow.
I don't hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Not gonna lie.
Are you in the same room that you were living in before you left?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then actually, I'm gonna be in the other room because my sister... right now, my uncle's visiting from Korea.
Yeah.
So he's using the other bedroom.
I see.
So... my sister is going to take my old bedroom because it's a little bit bigger. And then I'm going to take her old bedroom. So we're just swapping.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah. I'll get in there next week, sometime next week.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what, the transition back home hasn't been too rocky? I know sometimes with some people that transition can be a little bit.
No, because everybody's busy.
Mm.
I'm busy. My parents are busy. My mom was in the Grand Canyon with my uncle for the last, 3-4 days. Yeah. They just flew back this morning.
Mm.
They got in at 6:30 a.m., so I went to go pick them up.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, this week, the rest of this week will be the real test. But
yeah.
So far, it's okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I remember something I did.
What'd you do?
One of our congregants is part of a neighborhood band.
Oh yeah.
And he plays bass for
That's
that
right.
band. And on Saturday they put on a small concert on their lawn and invited their neighbors. It was potluck. And it was fun.
Yeah.
And I asked them, did they get permits? And they're like, no. And I'm like, what do you think your neighbors are gonna think? They're like, we'll find out.
Yeah, I love that wait and see approach.
Yeah. And it was good because it was all songs from my high school days and stuff.
Hmm.
And it was nice. It was a good time.
Like what songs?
There was one, The Cure. I forgot the name of it.
Creep? No, that's not The Cure.
Yeah, and then there was Runaway Train by... I forgot what that band. There's a whole bunch of them.
I know Runaway Train. And I know The Cure.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
But yeah, his voice, the main guy, he was the drummer and the voice, the main voice.
Oh wow.
And his voice was perfect for that kind of music. Mm. That's actually, yeah. And I got to see, so the congregants who played, his family, they'd been sick on and off for like past month and a half.
Right.
So I finally got to see them, and their daughter Ivy, so cute. Mm. Oh my goodness. Yeah, and I kept doing like these expressions with my eyes, and she was like trying to follow me.
Yeah.
It was so cute.
She's really cute right now.
Yeah. I'm sorry I couldn't go to that. The invitation sort of went out to everyone, and I just kind of had prior plans. But yeah, from the video that I saw on your Instagram thereafter, I was like, man, that sounds like it would have been a blast to go to.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Except when they tried to get everybody to dance.
Did you dance?
No, of course not.
I stood up because I was trying to be respectful.
Right.
And so then, what did you do?
And then I just started videotaping.
Oh my gosh, PK.
That's your excuse not to dance.
That's right.
Record
you
video.
Can at least clap.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Are you guys watching anything new recently?
Yes.
What are you watching over there?
I'm watching Silo.
Silo.
On Apple TV
Plus. Right.
It's with that girl from the Mission Impossible movies and the Dune movie.
Yes.
And man, it's good.
Uh-huh. What's it about?
It's sci-fi. The way I'm going to describe it, it's going to make it sound terrible. But they're stuck in a silo-looking building.
Uh-huh.
And they don't know how they got there. And they're told they can't leave. And it's a mystery.
Mm.
That's basically it.
Okay.
it's weird.
Riveting.
It just makes me want to watch it.
Riveting stuff.
That, and I'm still working my way through Castle, which is
the Nathan Fillion show?
Yeah, yeah.
From like years ago?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Because I love Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's just so much fun to watch, and he has a great co-star, and she's fabulous, and so I'm just having a good time.
Okay.
Yeah. So wow, those are two shows.
Castle and Silo.
Yeah, very different.
Yeah. What about you, Pastor Bobby? Any matchmaking shows?
No.
Did they do the Syrian matchmaking?
Well, because I was watching Indian matchmaking,
yeah,
my Netflix algorithm, it brought up like a like an Indian version of like Real Housewives.
Okay.
But they're all like Bollywood star wives. I watched like one like half of an episode, and I was like, sorry, I can't. I can watch Indian matchmaking, but I can't watch this.
Yeah.
So but I'm watching Dr. Cha, which is like a Korean drama.
I'm watching that one too.
Dude, it's so good. It's about a lady, like she's a mom of two like older kids, and she like finds a new life. She like has like a second chapter kind of pursuing her doctor career, because that's what she was doing, and then she got knocked up. So, and then like all the drama that happens in her life as she's pursuing this.
Mm-hmm. Becoming a doctor.
Yeah, but not so specifically to the process of becoming a doctor, but just her family.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is it good?
I think it's good.
Like, really good?
It's a good laugh. Like, it's a sad... It's not a fun topic, but, like, I think, like, the comedy is funny, so okay, it's good. Forget I like it.
Forget it. I'm not gonna watch it.
I don't expect you to.
It is an interesting watch, I'll say that. So, I started Dr. Cha as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because... Whatever, I'm going to put my wife on blast for a second.
Oh, no.
I sat down, my wife and I sat down to watch Dr. Cha together because someone recommended it to her.
Uh-oh.
And so she was like, oh, we should watch Dr. Cha together. I was like, okay, I'll sit down and watch it, because we weren't watching anything at the time.
Yeah.
We had just finished all of our dramas and all of our different TV shows. And we have like Modern Family that will default back to, you know, things like that, but... We didn't have anything new, so I was like, okay, well, you know, let's give it a try. And so we watched it, or we started watching it, and then My wife was like on her phone. She fell asleep, going to the bathroom, making dinner, like doing all this stuff. And I'm just like sitting there watching. And so eventually, like, she got disengaged from the show. Uh-huh. But I just kept watching it.
Oh, my God.
You're in it.
I'm in it. And so every weekend that passes, two new episodes come out. Uh-huh. And so, you know, Monday, Tuesday comes around, I'm like, Dawn, we should watch the show. And she's like, oh, your favorite show? I was like, listen, lady, we watched it because you told us to watch it. And she's like, yeah, whatever. It's your favorite show. I was like, all right, fine. There's no winning right now. But yeah, Dr. Cha is one of them. And then another show. These are Korean dramas, by the way, on Netflix. There is The Good Bad Mother.
Yeah.
That one's pretty good.
That one's actually pretty good.
Actually, Dawn started watching that like a separate from me.
Okay.
And then I like started watching episode 3 and 4. And then I got hooked. I was like, oh, shoot. I like this show.
But did you watch The Glory?
The Glory?
Yeah.
Did you watch it? What?
See, my problem is we watch it too late and I keep falling asleep. But it seemed like it was pretty decent.
What, The Glory?
Yeah. Everybody raves about it.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So this show that you're talking about, The Good Bad Mother, like where is it next to The Glory?
I like it better than Dr. Cha. But it's a slightly different show altogether.
Okay. How about next to 2521?
Wow.
That show's like so whack.
Wow, you brought back 2521.
That's like his favorite thing.
That's like mine and my wife's, you know, it's up there. Yeah. It's like top of the list. Maybe not our very favorite one, but it's like in the last year or so, the ones that we watch, that's pretty up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I'll give it a try. I mean, whenever you're done watching Silo, whenever you're done watching Castle, put on Good Bad Mother.
Okay.
Put on Dr.
Chance. Catch him 3 years later.
It's 2028.
I think part of me just hates the title, but...
What, Good Bad Mother?
Good Bad Mother. I don't know.
Yeah. Also...
It's not even a translation.
It's not. It's
what
just
is the actual Korean title?
Oh, it's not just Bad Mother?
Oh, yeah, so... In Korean, it's Naeun Eomma.
Oh, which see? I would watch that.
In English, it's just Bad Mother or Bad Mom.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, the translators, and I don't know why they do this, man. I might have to write a letter to Netflix or something, because their translators add all these interpretations to either the titles or the subtitles altogether. And I'm just like, this isn't it.
Yes.
This is not it.
I preached on that.
Yes. Yeah, but your sermon or the illustration of your sermon, I remember, it was more about how like there are some things in Korean that just...
Don't translate.
They don't translate. This is an offense to my mother tongue.
They're adding things. Yeah.
They're interpreting it and then they're translating it. That's what they're doing.
I see.
Yeah.
Bad.
I'm real heated about this now.
Okay. Wow. That's a long intro. Good stuff.
I still got stuff to talk about over here.
He's not done. Taking a pause.
John Wick 4?
Oh, man. Oh, actually, Indiana Jones is coming out, I think. What else is coming out this week?
Harrison Ford is still alive.
Oh, my word.
He's pretty old, right?
Yeah.
Can you not ever utter those words again?
Why? I'm just asking.
That guy needs to live forever.
Fat checks.
That's true. Fat checks indeed. Yes.
Okay.
But is he like running around, jumping still?
I don't know. We'll have to wait till the new Indiana Jones movie comes out.
Oh, I know what I'm looking forward to. It's the new Apple event.
The new Apple event?
Yeah, I've been waiting for the new IMAX.
IMAC, computers.
What do you call that?
The unveiling?
But that's not going to happen until October, though, isn't it?
Monday.
October?
There's a developers conference, which happens in the summer.
I see.
Then another one. So
I see.
So
I remember we watched like one of those one of like when they came out with like Apple Arcade or Apple Plus or whatever.
Yeah.
He was like, we have to watch it, and it was on a Tuesday because it was our staff meeting. After our staff meeting, we all sat together and watched it.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I was like,
oh, no.
I'm wasting my life. This is...
But you were amazed, I remember.
I was very impressed because I had never watched... I don't know what is it called? Like when they do that? Unveiling.
Kind of the keynote address.
Yeah. Apple keynotes. They're called Apple keynotes.
Yeah, Apple keynotes.
Yeah.
Mm. I was so impressed by the way they did the presentation mm-hmm. and, you know, all the new upgrades that they're making to the stuff. But then we were talking about it. But then now that I think about it, I'm like, that's like the only one and only one I've ever watched.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know.
All right.
Good production values in those.
It was. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, Apple designs things beautifully. Beautifully.
Yeah.
In any case.
Oh.
I don't even know where to go from here. So we should probably take a break. And then here's what I want to do today. What I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about the message. We're going to talk a little bit about the Luke chapter 15, from which Pastor Key, you kind of spoke about. And then kind of speaking about Netflix documentaries or like about something on the back end that I'll kind of unveil in a little bit later. Okay. Alrighty. So if you're watching, if you're listening, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And we're back.
We are back.
We're in the middle of our What Do You Mean, Jesus series. Pastor Key, you gave the message last time on Luke chapter 15. I was interested in like the kind of like, because I had just preached about Luke chapter 16.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then you gave the message on Luke chapter 15. Mm. I did think that it was like... for lack of a better word, like it warranted discussion because there was so much like good stuff that was in the message, but there was a lot of it. And sometimes, you know, for want of like one tree, you lose sight of the forest, mm-hmm. right? And so what I want to do is I kind of want to go over it one more time. And for our listeners, for the audience, I want to be able to unpack Luke chapter 15 and all the, you know, different things that we were talking about. And then, like I said before the break, there's something toward the end of the podcast that I want to do. Pastor Key, if you could, maybe just give us a reminder of the past Sunday sermon, kind of where you wanted to go. Mm-hmm. And I'll just sort of release it back to you for that.
Yeah, so it was on Luke chapter 15, which contains what is known as those three parables of grace, right? The parable of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost sons, which is sometimes called the parable of the prodigal son, which is not really completely accurate. And, you know, right before he gives these three parables, he says... Or it says, and he told them this parable. So these three parables are supposed to actually be taken as one. And each of them gives a different nuance to the overarching message of the three parables, right? Or the three mini parables. And, you know, I was basically riffing off of Core Insight by Tim Keller that I was exposed to. But then also I learned subsequently that a lot of authors have been saying this. And that is... you know, these three parables taken as one, you see different dimensions to different aspects like lostness and foundness. And I focused on this whole idea of being lost and how, you know, the sheep is lost because it's dumb. It's dumb. Coin is lost not because of anything besides the negligence of somebody else. And then the son is lost, or the two sons are lost out of willfulness and then pride. And it's not that those function independently, but they're all intertwined, which makes being lost such a difficult, complex place to be in. You know, it's, you can't extricate yourself out of it, and this is why you need a savior. That was basically the core of my message. But then I talked about some elements that really stuck out to me about just how much grace that Jesus is saying the Father has for us. You know, just even this idea of just showing up, the Son, the Father's like, takes him back without, you know, it was just crazy how open and gracious he was. And so that's basically the whole message.
Yeah. Pastor Bobby, were you able to give the message a listen at all?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What were some of the things that kind of stood out to you as you were listening?
I like that you talked about all the parables. Mm. I think, you know, last podcast we kind of talked about how sometimes those breakdowns, or like the titles that break down the parable, mm-hmm. like the chapters, kind of mess with you a little bit. And I think showing people you don't always have to like in your, through your message, it was kind of like, oh, you got to see, sometimes you got to see like a little bit above, mm-hmm. right? To get the full picture of what Jesus is saying. Mm-hmm. So I really like that aspect. And I think like what stuck out to me the most is probably the part, like towards the end, you said something about when you were mentioning the two sons, like even though physically the second son was lost, like clearly he's not around, but the heart of the first son was also lost, even though he was physically present. Yeah. I think that kind of stuck with me. Yeah. And that's something I've been actually thinking about since I finished listening to the sermon. Mm. So, Yeah, I thought it was good.
Okay.
Yeah.
You flipped the two sons, by the way. But I think it was just a verbal.
I'm sorry.
It's a verbal slip. So I think people understood.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when I was listening to the message. You know, these parables, first of all, it was the parable of the lost sheep. Then it's the parable of the lost coin. Then it's the parable of the lost, or other translations, different books of the Bible. Mm-hmm. They'll say like the parable of the prodigal son, right? Yeah. And it's kind of like these are three different parables. And I loved your point, because it's so true. It's not so much that they're three different parables, but that it's one large parable with almost three sub parables, right? Like Jesus is in so many ways, like Jesus is conveying a big thing, but it's such a big thing that he needs like three sub parables in order to be able to get us to see it more clearly. And I wondered if we could, you know, kind of talk a little bit about.
She's looking at me.
What? I can't look at you.
Well, we're all a bit sensitive right now because we all want to be outside in this beautiful weather.
Oh, man.
In any case, I wondered if we can kind of go around and talk about, like, you know, for me, I've spent years just trying to unpack the parable of the prodigal son. And then when I was even younger, you know, as a child, like the idea of parable of the lost sheep, Jesus leaving the 100 leaving the 99 to get the one, right? Like the idea that Jesus would just come to me and he would forsake all others so that he would come to me. And that's something that sticks really deeply. But you know, lately, out of the three sub-parables, I'll call them for the sake of this conversation, lately I'm gravitating toward the lost coin parable, right? Like, and I think it's just one of those things where I spent so many years putting so much attention and focus on the other two parables that, you know, like as I get older, I kind of go to those places that I've neglected, particularly in my own biblical interpretation, and I go like, what's there? Like, how do I get all the truth that I can get from there, right? So for you guys, like out of those three parables, which one do you often kind of default to or go to? Like every time you go to Luke 15, like which of the three of those sub parables are you often like getting a lot from or kind of turning to in different seasons of your life? Do you guys have anything like that out of the three?
Not particularly, but I think when I read the parable of the lost coin, I always wondered, but why is this one here? You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Like, why? I don't know.
It's a good question.
Like, why? How? Why is this one here?
Yeah.
But then, you know, after listening to your sermon, it makes so much sense because Jesus is talking about why we need a savior, why we need to be found. And he's looking at the concept of being lost, or like the reason to be found is because you're lost. And there's these different areas or like dimensions of what that looks like, you know? And so it makes a lot of sense now. Yeah. And the other ones, you know, like it's so popular, right? Like it's in a song. Everybody and their moms talk about the prodigal son. That's if you like miss church for 2 years, come back. You don't miss church for 2 years, but you know what I mean? Like you've been gone. You're like, the prodigal is back. Yeah. Like, you know, it's so around. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It's so ubiquitous in the culture.
Yeah.
But not the lost coin for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really gravitate toward any of them. I mean, the prodigal son, just because it was the most popular as you grew up. But, I always found the sheep one funny. But kind of, I would say that had a lot of emotional, you know, impact for me. But I think, you know, actually this time the coin thing did it for me as well, because I had learned that archaeological fact about coins being found in the crevices of people's floors because they're made out of stone and there's crevices there. I'm like, oh my God, that like brings this whole thing to life. It's pretty incredible. But yeah, no, nothing really too much. But yeah, I'm curious as to why, you know, you're feeling that parable. I mean, that mini parable.
Yeah, probably just neglect in my younger years. Okay. But I think in the same way that like, I don't know what it is about the nature of being found. I mean, like the other parables also talk about the condition. Like it highlights being lost and it highlights being found, right? So the sheep is lost and then the shepherd goes out and finds them.
Yep.
The prodigal son and the older son, you know, like they're both lost. And the true tragedy is that they're both lost, not one over the other, right? But something about how the picture is painted, it kind of portrays the idea that this is the woman's like only coin, right? Like, she might have a roof over her head and she might have all of these other things sorted out. But in terms of like currency and coin, like it kind of matters, especially in the commerce of that era. And there's an idea that she searches so heavily because it's her only coin.
It's 1 out of 10.
Huh?
It's 10 coins and she lost one.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying the nature of how, what is she looking for?
What is value? Yeah.
It's like she looks so hard for that one. Yeah. It's almost like she doesn't have any other coin.
Yeah.
And something about it reaches out to me. I think, you know, and the 1 out of 10 theme kind of shows its head in other places, right? When it's Jesus heals 10 lepers, but only one comes back. And and all of these themes that kind of get echoed throughout the pages of the Bible and particularly the Gospels, right? But something about the nature of looking, searching as if it's the only thing. She has 9 other ones, but this is the one that she really looks for, and this is the one that she really needs. And then the nature of being found and celebration. You know, the idea that she would call her friend over, like, what? Like, what does that do? But on the most basic level, it tells us that when we are found, or when something is found, it is a cause for celebration. And so imagine all of heaven that rejoices over the few lost ones that are found, you know, the great celebration, the great banquet that the older son doesn't go to initially. Like that's for everyone. And some of us, you know, we're kind of in different places, but yeah, just the nature of like lost and found.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's I don't know. You plumb these things and they just get more and more powerful.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Did you feel like you sort of did everything that you wanted to do when you gave the message?
No. The problem is each of these mini problems I could, you know, preach so much, you know, and there's so much stuff that I had to like kind of overlook, which is for the preacher always frustrating.
Yeah.
But in terms of the task at hand, yeah, I think I got the core message across, which was the whole lostness thing. But I realized, you know, I just don't want to focus on that. I need to also round it out or pull them toward the gospel message, which is about grace.
Yeah.
Which is where I landed at the end. So in that sense, I feel like I did everything that I want to do. Feedback was interesting, but anyway.
Well, what was interesting?
Well, it's so funny. Like, some people said kind of these hyperbolic statements, like, that's like the best sermon I've heard. This or that, you know, like one person said it was like top 10 of my sermons. In my mind, I'm just like, I don't know how to take this because the preface of the sermon was, I got this from Tim Keller.
Yeah.
Some other scholars. And they're like,
yeah.
I was like, what does this mean? You know? And so it's interesting because when they said it, I was like, oh, thank you. But, you know, the core insight was from Tim Keller and stuff. But then part of me was like, but I put a lot of my stuff in there too. And I'm curious, like, what psychology was making me kind of not own, you know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe it's just trying to be humble or whatever. But I don't know. It was a weird, like, moment afterward.
Well, what goes through your mind then? Because as you said, maybe the core stuff is from Tim Keller.
Yeah.
And obviously you're putting your own spin on everything and you're still kind of going at it in the way that you go after, you know, the scriptures.
Yeah, yeah.
But then somebody comes up to you and gives you a compliment on it. Like, what's going through your mind then?
I think in the moment I'm actually encouraged because I'm like, oh, wow, I worked hard on that.
Yeah.
But then I don't know why it came out, but like, oh, yeah, you know, listening to Tim Keller as well. And they're like, yeah. And then in my mind, I'm like, I'm curious if they think now that it wasn't, I didn't put anything into it. You know what I mean? I just kind of copied and pasted from somebody else. I don't know. Do you see what I'm saying? And so I in the back of my mind, I was just like, why did I just delegitimize all the work that I put into this? You know, and in the other person's eyes, I'm thinking, oh, now they think I didn't do anything. You know, it's just stupid, like my human side coming out.
Right.
But I've never had that experience before.
Yeah.
You know, because I would say that's the first sermon I've ever given where I really did a long preface to where I got the source from.
Right.
Right. And so, I don't know, it's just an interesting kind of experience afterward.
Oh, well, I mean, that leads us to an interesting place because, like, feedback, giving a message and getting feedback, right? Like, it's always a tricky thing, and it's something that we have kind of explored here on this podcast. But, I mean, for you, Bobe, like, when you give a message, and you're pretty vocal about the fact that, like, maybe you don't have enough, like, experience, or maybe you just need more experience, and every sermon is kind of like an opportunity for you to learn, you know, this, that, or the other thing, right? So, like, I'm curious for you then, how do you handle critique, you know? And I think our congregation is pretty good. I think they're really generous. I think they're really gracious, but there are times when, you know, maybe they might say, like, oh, I didn't quite get that, or it's a little hard to follow, which is understandable, right? And so, you know, Bobby, for you, I'm curious to know, like, how do you handle feedback? Are you quick to deflect it? Are you, do you bask in it? Like, yes.
Definitely the second.
Yeah. I think that's what keeps me going. I'm just kidding. When people say good things about, you know, what I shared, I say, thank you. I was glad you're blessed. I'm glad you're blessed.
Yeah.
Praise Lord. Praise the Lord. And that's like kind of my way of not deflecting their compliment.
Mm.
So I just say, oh, thanks. Oh, I'm so glad that blessed you, you know, that way. I haven't really received critique from like congregants per se, but I do have a sister. and, you know, for majority of my sermons, even though she goes to a different church, she'll come whenever I'm preaching. And then I'll be like, yo, tell me the truth, right? Because, like, you know, I want to know. Part of it is because I want to know that I want to know what I did wrong or something I could improve on. So she'll say things like, oh, you do this too much. You play with your hair too much. Don't do that. You know, stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Yeah. I noticed that too. You know, and I'll try to like consciously change it the next time.
Nobody notices that though.
No, but I do.
Only you and your sibling.
Just you and your sister.
There's one time, there's this one time I did my hair. I got the keratin treatment and that made my hair, because I got crazy hair. So I have to do stuff to make it tame. And it was like the following week after I got that treatment. It makes your hair really smooth. But then the salon lady decided to recommend me like a conditioner for my hair that's like really good. So I used it that day when I washed my hair in the morning, but then I put a little too much and I knew I did that. I didn't do it on purpose. It just happens, you know, sometimes. And I was preaching that day and my hair was everywhere because it was so luscious and like smooth. I couldn't figure, and it was so distracting to me.
Luscious.
It was all kinds of silky that, you know, like for your hair to stay, the girls, like the ladies that are listening or men who have longer hair will understand.
Yes.
It can't be too silky because it just goes everywhere. And it was just one of those things. And then that day, somebody in the congregation, like one of the congregants, I was like, man, my hair, I was touching my hair so much. I made a comment like that. And she was like, yeah, no, does it look luscious? Every time after that, I think like, and my sister was there that day too. And she was like, you got to stop playing with your hair. I'm like, I'm trying.
Yeah.
You know, it's just when I guess that's like a girl problem. But then I look on YouTube when I'm listening to like other like women preachers and they have their hair down. I don't know how they get their hair to stay. Maybe they don't wash it the morning of. I don't know. But like, it just stays. And I'm like, oh my God.
Maybe they just have like a care team.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure they do. But it's just fascinating. Like, I don't know. My hair is just everywhere, so.
Okay, we got a YouTuber sermons.
What day was it?
I remember which sermon it was.
Okay.
But it was like a while ago. It's like way back. Yeah, but.
Maybe in a bonus feature.
Insert right here. No, I'm kidding.
Curious.
Go
ahead.
No, I was just gonna say we spend a lot of time in here.
That's all right.
Well, I mean, you guys don't gotta worry about it. You just gotta do something and just like show up.
Hey,
right?
I wore a hat one Sunday. I was like, that's the best that I can do right now.
Oh, you did?
You did for preaching?
No, not preaching.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
A lot of people wear hats Sunday. Anyway.
I'm curious to know, like, either the worst or like the hardest critique or criticism that you've ever received?
Ooh, I know this one.
Okay, you go first.
So there is many years back. This is back in the early 2000s. I had this thing with a friend who's a pastor, and we would read books together and then come together each week to kind of talk about them, right? And then we would listen to each other's sermons. And then one time he goes, you know, your sermons are Christ-centered, but they don't really, like, make people fall in love with Christ.
Damn.
Right? And I was like, what the hell?
Wow.
I was so angry. Because in my mind, I'm like, I put so much work into making it Christ-centered, this and that.
Yeah.
But that was also the best feedback I've ever received.
Yeah.
Because for me, you know, Jesus is the most beautiful thing in the Bible, right? And if somehow I'm not able to tap into that, I feel like I'm doing a disservice to the message. Like, people should be able to feel that. And so ever since then, I've been working really hard to try to bring out the beauty of Christ in what I preach. So it was hardest. And then it became the best. So that's
It was a true critique. It was a true criticism that came from a real place and not just to hurt you.
Yeah, and we stayed friends.
I don't know how after that.
But like, but I remember being really upset because I was really offended.
Yeah.
But then, because I like put a lot of work into it, but then, you know, one of the things I've always learned over the years is if they're 99% wrong, but there's 1% truth, look for that 1%.
Sure.
This time it was, I feel like he was 100% right, but you know, it's just, it was very painful though, hearing it.
Yeah. Pobe, what about for you? What's the harshest or worst critique you've ever received?
On my preaching?
It could be preaching. It could be like teaching. It could be leadership style. You know, like.
I remember, in college, I was we were planning a retreat, and I was partnered with one of my friends, and we were in charge of doing games. So we're coming up with games, and he had these ideas. And I was like, okay, we can do that, but let's tweak it like this, you know, just kind of making suggestions because it's a larger crowd, you know, whatever. And then we get to like our large team meeting, and I forgot what the question was. I think the leader asked, oh, how are you guys, like, how is your team going or something? And it's not really a critique directly to me, but it was his response. He said something like, oh, horrible. And I was like, what? I was like, what? I was like, he was like, yeah. And pretty much he was saying I was too like domineering. And I was like,
wow,
we're literally doing all your games, but we just made these changes. And I remember thinking like, what? And then I have two younger sisters. The one right below me, Serbi, she like pulled him aside that night and talked to him and was like, you don't get to talk like that to my sister. You don't get to talk like that about my sister.
That's what's up.
Yeah. She's like, you know, my sister. I mean, I'm still friends with him. I mean, not so much now, but you know, we, you know, talked it out, whatever. But I was like so shocked. Yeah. And then my sister was like, that's not okay. And she like went and talked to him and I was like, thank you. Because like back then I didn't know how to handle situations like that. So, you know, I was glad to have my sister there, but at the same time I was like, oh, okay. And that like did something to me. It really did something to me for a while, for a long time. And then now it doesn't do anything to me. So yeah, that's why I could talk about it. But
yeah.
I want your sister to fight for me.
Dude, she'll like take the other person down. Like, yeah, she's crazy. She can be crazy sometimes. That's but like awesome. In the best way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
Yeah, man.
This is something I still kind of like, not wrestle with. I'm pretty like at peace about it. But for a while, I used to wrestle with this idea. This is about my worship leading. I was at a church for a few months, like 9-10 months, something like that. And I was like in charge of the worship there. And, you know, I still don't know what people wanted. I still don't know, like, kind of what the style of thing was there. But one of the comments that eventually got back to me was that my worship style was too long and emotional. And, that one really, like, rubbed me the wrong way when I heard it. And, you know, like, I've been called a bad preacher. I have been called uneducated. I have been loosely associated with like heresy. I don't think I'm a heretic, but you know, like I've been loosely associated with like people that maybe like are too outlandish for more conservative minds. Like, for whatever reason, that's the one that gets me sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, the idea that when I lead worship, it's too long and it's too emotional. And there's a component of it for me that's like, I worship as authentically as I know how because of how God has moved in my life.
Yeah.
So the idea that I don't get to be emotional about it is like, it's such like a weird, I don't know, it's like, what are you talking about? Like, how small is your God that you can be short and controlled about how much you love him? Do you know what I mean? It's like, what are you talking about? So,
That makes me upset. No, it does, because like I've often heard about people like, oh, it's too emotional.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, it should be emotional.
Yeah.
You know, we're all emotional beings.
Yeah.
You know, and people say it's emotionally manipulative, and I don't think so. I think telling a story is emotionally manipulative if you look at it a certain way. You know what I mean? That's the whole point. You want to tap into people's emotions.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, if you're using it toward, you know, bad ends, that's one thing, but you're just trying to get them more in touch with God.
Yeah.
I should have come fought for you.
You should have my sister on your team. She'd be like, let me give you a piece of my mind.
Give him the business, yeah. Yeah, I mean... You know, it's funny. It's like something that I don't carry it, but I almost the idea that that is a critique that I've received. I almost walk around with like a red badge of courage. It's like, yeah, that's how I do worship. Mm-hmm. Like I sing and I shout and I sing the chorus too many times and I'll sing the bridge too many times and I'll like sing in keys that I shouldn't sing sometimes because like I just want to be able to like. Do worship, and I want to be able to worship. I just said a long time ago that, like, if I'm the only one in the room that's worshiping, then that's enough. And yeah, I don't know. And it's weird how we, you know, like we kind of. It's funny because we got here like a little bit at a time, which is tangentially. Like related to the parables.
That, what were we talking about?
Yeah. What was the parable?
You know, it's funny. You know, it's funny that we kind of are here and we feel like so separated from our original conversation, right? Like, I was talking to you guys about this, but years ago, I was reading a commentary in Baba College about Luke chapter 15 and how. Like all of these different sub parables have, you know, they talk about the different conditions of lostness. And one of the things that kind of stood out to me was the nature of like, how do sheep get lost? And, you know, like sheep, Pastor Key, as you said in your sermon, sheep are kind of dumb, you know, like, and all they care about is like eating grass and then like moving on to the next patch of grass. And so the idea is that like, how do sheep get lost? One patch of grass at a time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden they're lost. Like sheep never run away. They're just nibbling and kind of going far away from the idea, right? And I don't know. I want to try to steer it back, right? And I want to try to kind of bring it back to that place, the parables, lost and found. And earlier I had hinted at this thing, right? That I wanted to talk about. And, you know, really quickly, it's, I don't know if you've seen it on Hulu. I think it's also on Netflix. I forget, but it's definitely on Hulu. I know it is, but it is, it's a series. And it's, I think it's about Carl Lentz. And Carl Lentz and like
the Hillsongs.
Yeah. The former Hillsong New York pastor. And I haven't seen it yet. A friend told me about it.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, so
I'm about to watch it.
Yeah. A friend told me about it and he was saying how like it's a really interesting like case study of what happens to someone like, you know, once they sort of get you know, go through the machine of like this big mega church and all this stuff, right? And you know, we were just kind of going back and forth on it, and it just kind of sparked this thing in my brain and something that I wanted to kind of bring up in this conversation. You know, like the idea of mega church, and I swear I'm gonna eventually swing it back to our original sermon conversation, but you know, the idea of mega churches, right? We have to contend with the idea of mega churches and like their place in the large scale Christianity, especially in this nation. I guess my question is like, this is a podcast about spirituality, right? This is a podcast about trying to take our faith a little bit deeper. And I guess my question is for a Hillsong or like an Elevation Church or a Vertical Church, right? Like, or
there's a Vertical Church.
Yeah. Okay. It's I think it's in North Carolina somewhere.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. So, but like all of these big name churches, right? who are, you know, raising people up, and or they themselves are led by like very dynamic speakers who might themselves be a little too emotional in like the giving of their messages. I know another big name right now is Mike Todd of Transformation Church, and so here's what I want to kind of contemplate, right? We ourselves, we're a church. Mm-hmm. We hover around 60 to 70-ish people every mm-hmm. Sunday, mm-hmm. sometimes more, sometimes less. The idea is this, like, will we ever get there? Why or why not? Like, how helpful is a mega church? Like, where does a mega church what's the place in it all, right? Like, mm-hmm. did Jesus have mega churches on his mind when he died on the cross for our sins and then thusly like established the church as we know it today, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to explore that idea a little bit. Like, how did the modern mega church even get here? Mm. Like, how did we even get to this place? Is it just a result of like the country that we live in and the nation and the culture that we are? Or is there something deeper? Is it more about human nature? Like, I don't know. Have you guys thought about the nature of mega churches at all? Have you guys been to mega churches? Have you ever been to their services at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been to a bunch of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what have your experiences been?
I mean, it's so easy to criticize mega churches and lambast them, you know, but my experience has always been like, okay, I'll take this for what it is.
Sure.
I will say though, because it's such high production value, I find it hard to connect with them. I find the overly high production values actually distracting for some reason, personally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just take it for what it is. I have fun. We go to a sort of mega church when we're down in Florida for vacation.
Yeah.
It's called Radiant.
Okay.
One of the fastest growing churches in Florida. And, you know, guy's a great speaker, and I'm always convicted by it. So, you know, as long as I take it for what it's worth, then I'm not too irked by it or bothered by it.
Sure.
You know, there's always a criticism that mega churches are a mile wide and an inch deep, right? And I think that's just the reality of any large kind of type of, you know, populated organization.
Sure.
You know, and not all churches are like that. You know, Liquid Church could be considered a mega church, right?
Right.
I guess
right.
in our area. And I heard stories about how some real discipleship that happens there, mm-hmm. you know, and one of our members was really experienced so much goodness in that church. So I'm, you know, grateful for that. So I definitely think there are strengths to mega churches, but there are also significant downsides as well. But I don't need to get into that. Maybe I'll get into it in a little bit, but maybe we can dabble in here.
But wait, what about you? Like, what's your experience with mega church? I mean, it's hard to even, like, when do you even cross that threshold, right? Like, when does a church become a church? Like, go from a church to a mega church, right? But for you, with your own experiences, like, have you ever been to one? What are your experiences? Like, how do you view them?
Yeah, I think, like, we have to, like, be on the same page about what we categorize as a mega church.
Sure,
is it like the size, the sheer size, or is it like the celebrity of the pastor that hosts the mega church, right? For example, Carl Lentz, he was a part of a mega church, but he was also very widely known. But there are plenty of churches across America who have the same size but don't have pastors that are as well known as Mike Todd.
Oh, interesting.
Or you know, like Erwin McManus or whatever, mm-hmm. right?
That's true.
So, like, I think
interesting.
Those are like kind of like the two different types of categories of mega church. Because I've been to a big size church whose pastor is not as popular as those people, and I've been to Mosaic Church in California,
sure.
Erwin McManus's church. Mm-hmm. I've been to Hillsong when Carl Lentz was there in the city. Yeah, and I always wonder, like, I think those people, they're gifted, you know, like God has clearly gifted them with something, right? And that's why they can have the type of growth that, because they didn't start big, they started very small. So there must be something, right, that they have that God you know, expanded through them, right? So I think, you know, that's okay. And then I hear stories about how, like, people, like, the question always in my mind is, so then what does discipleship look like in a church that is so big? And you can see it through their staff as well, right? Like, what kind of, how fully loaded their staff is to make this thing run. You know, I've gone to Liquid Church. I wasn't, like, heavily plugged in or anything. I just, like, attended their service. And even having a satellite service is so different from having a pastor in front of your face.
That's right.
You know? So those are, like, all the different types of things. I think big-sized churches, mega churches, I think they're good in terms of, you know, normally, or people will say that that's, like, the... they most likely follow, like, the attractional model, right? Like, just attracting people into the church. And I think that's great. I think, you know, yeah, so I think that's great. I don't think we're any better because, like, smaller churches are any better because we're smaller. Or bigger churches are better because they're bigger. I think it's just a matter of, like, what are people looking for? What do people desire? If I'm not going to get what I want or need, what I feel like I need for my spiritual growth at a big church, then I might look for a small church. Or if I feel like maybe I want to, I value the big production, right? Some people really think, because some people are attracted to atmosphere, you know, and they create great atmosphere. It was crazy. I went, when I was at one of those churches, I won't say which one. They walked around giving us water, like, on a silver platter with, like, plastic cups. But they're, like, you know, and then they, like, were, like, oh, do you want a water? And I was, like, I understand hospitality. But that's a little bit different, right? So just, you know, those types of things. But, yeah, those... that was a not a very organized thought, but that's how I feel.
Well, yeah, no, but I'm curious to know because, like, Bobby, for you, you highlighted that there's a difference between a big church with, like, that, like, a huge church in size and a church that's led by a celebrity pastor, leader, figure, right? In my mind, like, that big church in size is led by a pastor, leader, figure, maybe not celebrity, but at least with some hefty amount of influence by the sheer size of their congregation, right? Like, by simple virtue of the fact that their congregation size reaches past a certain point, like, that's definitely, I don't know, that to me qualifies, right? And so, you know, what we're talking about here, like, and Pastor Key, you kind of said this thing of, like, you know, you take it for what it is. And my question is, like, well, what is that exactly? Like, what is it that, how do we evaluate these things? And keep in mind, I'm asking these things in light of this Carl Lentz documentary, which probably itself lambasts Hillsong Church and their global presence and their wide, you know, reach and and just their absolute, like, you know, top of the charts, top of the list, New York Times, like, every list and chart that there is, like, on Good Morning America and world tours. It's like, this documentary itself lambasts this kind of a church, right? And so for me, like, if we're taking it for the good, what is the good in it, right? And if we're saying avoid it, like, what are we telling people to avoid, right? Like, there is a bit of an evaluation that I would like for us to do, right, when we consider these churches, right? So for you guys, like, how then do you like filter or process, like, when you walk into the doors of a really big church, however you found yourself there? Are there things that you're automatically, like, shielding yourself from? Are there things that you're automatically, like, oh, I'll open myself up to this, but not this? Do you guys have, like, anything like that?
Not really, besides theology, you know, because when I go to a mega church, anything I'm seeing there is skin deep. It's all surface. You know, I can't really make a judgment. And, you know, same thing. Yeah. I just can't make a judgment about what's underneath all of this until I do a little bit more research. But I will say, you know, I do agree with your statement. Like, you know, we should be healthily critical. Is that a word?
Healthily critical, yes.
Yeah, of these things. And your original question was what?
How do you process? How do you filter? Are there things that you're opening yourself up to and things that you're intentionally closing yourself off from?
Yeah, so what the decision I make is like, I don't know enough about this church right now to make an informed critique.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just go in and just kind of receive what I think I can receive and be gracious as I can. I'll do a little bit of preliminary research just to make sure it's not a cult or anything like that.
Sure.
But besides that, I don't really typically go anywhere. But then when I sit down about the mega church phenomenon as a whole, then, you know, I'll start thinking, you know, more thoughtfully about it. But not when I'm just walking in. That's, I don't really, not too much goes through my mind.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, I think the same. Like if I was just a visitor, I just go and visit and have a good time, you know, as I would any other church. But then if I'm thinking about committing to this church, I would think a lot more deeply about, well, what is it that I'm looking for in a church community? Is this a church community? Like, how do they do discipleship? Like, you know, different things like that. But
that's interesting. I guess you're right. If I was trying to become a part of a mega church, then I would be thinking very differently about it. Right.
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting because I'm a pastor. I'm never going to become a part of another church as a member. You know what I mean?
Right, like, right.
Unless it's my own church.
Right.
I mean, I would just take the same precautions as I would any other church, to be honest. True. You know, like just because they're a mega church doesn't lessen their value of the work that they're doing in the kingdom unless found shady.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like until I'm given a reason to think that, oh, maybe I shouldn't be here. Maybe, you know, whatever, then it's all the same.
Yeah. Well, then, to that end, for us then, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for a church of our size, right? Mm-hmm. Because, whether we say it or not, there are things that immediately, like, we say megachurch, especially three pastors sitting around a table.
Mm-hmm.
We say megachurch, and there are immediately things that kind of come to our brains, mm-hmm. if I may say it that way, about, like, the flaws of megachurch or the flaws of celebrity pastor leaders, like the idea that, like, it's Pesky, you said it, a mile wide and you know, an inch deep, like the idea of it's really flashy, it's really, like, good looking, but how deep does it go? Like how much, dare I say, like, you know, the critique of a lot of big churches or celebrity pastor led churches is the idea of, like, you know, what's the discipleship look like? Are people really being discipled? What's membership look like? Or is it just that you have 1,000 people walk through your doors on a Sunday and you have about 14 people on your, you know, like, on your member list, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, how is that going? You know, and these are things that often come up when we talk about, you know, big churches, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so leaving that on the table, but just putting it aside for a second, we come to our church, right? And everything that we do, I don't think we ever do anything to, you know, in light of, like, oh, we don't want to be a mega church and we don't, like, you know, speaking firsthand, we've never had that conversation.
No.
However, we still talk about things like, how are we doing with our discipleship? How are we doing with our membership? How are we doing with our giving? How are we doing with like our outreach and missions efforts, right? Mm-hmm. And so here's the question. The big mega churches that are often held up as the bad examples, right? Let's just talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say our church. And presumably, those big mega churches that are held up as the bad examples started off somewhere like our church.
Exactly.
Right? And so the question is, like, how do we avoid the flaws? How do we stay vigilant against, like, the specific bad things that are often associated with big mega church celebrity pastors?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, I think a place to start is actually building rigorous accountability into the structure of your church. This is why, and this is not always true, but this is why a lot of these, look, any church, regardless of the accountability model in there, there's going to be bad players in all of them, right? The problem is when there's no accountability built into it or not as robust accountability, those bad players can go a long time.
Sure.
Really doing severe damage.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so that's where I would start, honestly. And, you know, we actually did that a couple of years ago to build real, like, robust accountability into our church. And, you know, being a part of a Presbyterian denomination also is very helpful with that. And it doesn't mean there aren't Presbyterian churches that don't go through scandal. They'll go through it, but then the accountability structure is in there to bring them back, you know. And so that's where one place I would start.
Sure.
And there's plenty of other things to talk about, but that's where my mind goes immediately.
Yeah. Bobby, what about you?
Just don't do anything stupid.
Fair enough.
No, I think accountability is great. I think that's one of the things that a lot of people care about when they come to a church. I think especially in light of what's happened in the recent years.
Yep.
With church leadership and yeah. But I think also like making sure your pastor is healthy. I don't know. I mean, I think that goes along with accountability, but it's a little bit of a different shade, right? Like you're talking about the emotional, spiritual, mental health, physical health of your pastor. How is that going? I think that's something to care for as your church sees rapid growth. I think that's probably one of the things, because it's like you're seeing so much growth and you're like so excited for all these people to come and like, oh, they love Jesus, blah blah blah. And then the pastor also gets so excited, but then I think when you keep going without a break or keep going without knowing how to hit the brakes for yourself, you need something or somebody. And I think it's also on the part of the pastor as a leader to have their own community of people to keep you sane and down to earth. I think when you know, like, and it's not just for the people, I mean, churches that are seeing rapid growth, but it's for anybody in ministry and any Christian. Let's just be real, right? Like, we're just not supposed to be doing this by ourselves. So, and that's the same for the pastors. And I think it's very easy for us to isolate because of our positions, but it's actually the reason why I think we should be more vigilant about having a community of people that can keep us sane and accountable, because the people at our church are only going to see what we show them. But you need people that's going to see things that are ugly too. You know, and that can't just be your family. So,
no, I love that, because support and care for whatever pastor, it ends up being a preemptive cure for scandal. So many of the people that I know that end up in scandal, you look in their lives, like one person, they were doing the youth group, they were doing the adult English ministry, they're doing all these other things, and they just burned out. And when you're burned out, your capacity to fight temptation diminishes dramatically. In fact, you seek temptation to kind of make yourself feel better, and end up sleeping with somebody else, you know. And it's like, it doesn't excuse the behavior, but in our denomination, actually, we have this thing called pastoral covenant groups, where every couple months we have to come together with a small group of pastors just to be friends and care for one another. One of the things they observed is the people who have ended up in scandal in our denomination, most of them were not part of these groups. Now, whether it's a chicken or the egg or whatever, this and that. But I think it testifies to the importance of those things.
Sure. Yeah. So then, I know that this is not exactly an answer for like 10 minutes on a podcast. But is it worth exploring at all, like, how then these, like, how does Carl Lentz end up in scandal? How does, I won't say any other name, but how do these other pastors end up in scandal? Like, you would think that being that visible all the time, like, you would think something tells them, don't do the dumb thing. You know, like, it might be naive of me, right? Like, and one of the things that I was telling my friend who was telling me about this documentary he was basically saying like, yo, thank God we'll never be mega church pastors. Partly because like we know each other and we know like, yo, don't worry. Like I'll keep you, like, don't worry, I'll cut you down. You know, if you ever get too big, like, don't worry, I got you, you know? And so the question is like, you know, how does he get that lost?
Yeah.
How do they get that lost?
Yeah.
How does the person funnel money out of their church's bank account and into their own? How does this person have like a secret family for like decades? How does this person just like cheat on their taxes all the time? Like, and all of these things happen while they're doing the quote unquote good work of the ministry, right? Mm-hmm. And so the question is like, how does that happen? Mm. How do you get there? Any thoughts?
Well, I was actually listening to Keller on this a while back. He was just doing an interview. And believe it or not, I mean, no matter how much accountability structure you put in there, you can always hide. You can always
Sure. You
can always not tell people what's really going on. And I think that's a piece of it. I think another piece of it is just some people are just, there's just sin in there, right? Greed. And then you add power into the mix. And then that kind of becomes a thing. I think a lot of when, you know, these guys end up where they are, they didn't start off like that. A lot of them, believe it or not. If you listen to early recordings of Mark Driscoll,
yeah,
he was actually anti-megachurch.
Yeah.
Right? And he still had that brash personality, but Sure. Slowly but surely, as the years go by, you see the power getting to him. They start changing the documents to build more of that power base and stuff like that. And I can see how that's a temptation. And just like sheep, you eat one patch of grass, eat the next patch of grass, and then they're like at the wrong place.
Sure.
A mile away from where they were originally.
Sure.
And, you know, if I'm being completely honest, let me share this. Any pastor who says that when their church gets bigger, it doesn't make them happy is lying.
Yeah.
You know, because my church, the previous church, we got to about 300-400 people. And when that happens, like, yeah, I feel pretty good about myself. You know, and then after the pandemic, when our church our church plant was at its lowest, so I feel pretty crappy about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a real thing. And, you know, and so there are days like, man, I wonder if it'd be fun to do a mega church. I actually wake up from that pretty quick
Yeah. Because
I know the behind the scenes.
Sure.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
but anyway, yeah. So it's just, we're human beings, man. Just little things will end up there. What's that thing by David Benner? The human capacity for self-delusion is incredible.
Hmm.
And I just see that in play in a lot of these guys. They're like, oh, I won't be found out.
Yeah.
I'm smart enough.
Or I'm not doing anything wrong.
Yeah. Or I'm not doing anything wrong, right? Or this person won't say anything.
Yeah.
It's like delusional behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I feel the same way. And I think, like, you know how Paul's like, we're not fighting against people, but not flesh and blood, but with powers and principalities.
Yeah.
I 1,000% believe that for leaders.
Yeah.
I think the call is, especially for people who have influence. Okay. If any, like, 40-member church people, like, church, pastor was found out, how big of an influence does it make across the globe? you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like locally and to the people, the 40 people that they're leading, oh, it's devastating, right? But for people like these famous people who's like fallen from grace, you know, like for lack of a, like the impact is huge, right? So I think there is something like spiritual that happens also. But I think a lot of times, like, us leaders could get really, like, narcissistic sometimes.
Yeah.
We think that we're, like hot stuff and forget that we are human too. I think once you stop associating your, when you start placing your identity solely or mostly on your position and not your personhood and identity as a person first, like, I think that's when it can get really bad. Yeah. So if you take that off, the power that comes with the office too much, then I think you can really lose yourself. And you may have had good morals before you got all this popularity and or before you got all these sources and like things that you can hide from, you know, hide with, I should say. Like, you used to be a good person. I'm sure plenty of people said that to like these people. What happened to you?
Yeah.
You used to speak against those things. You weren't like that. You were so dedicated, blah, 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 blah. So I think that's what happens.
Yeah. I also think some of these guys are put into this place when they're not ready. You know, and so this is where I see, for example, the Joshua Harris thing. As much as people like make fun of him, you know, the guy who wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye, right? He's no longer a Christian. And he was so popular at one point in his 20s. And that's not only his fault. Like, the apparatus that put him there without discipling him, without putting the protections around him, I think that's partially why kind of these people end up where they are. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that in Carl Lentz's life. You know, maybe he was a little bit too young when they were pushing him in this direction and this and that. So I think that's part of the equation as well. It actually reminds me of the sermon or the Luke 15. Yeah. There's all these multiplicity factors that bring about, and then we're just completely lost.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what we see in a lot of these situations. But, you know, then there are people who... So I don't want this to end up being a discussion where it's like, oh, man, you get power and everybody gets lost.
Right.
Because those are the ones that are publicized. But then you come across people like Tim Keller. I mean, he had a lot of influence. And yet somehow he was able to stay grounded. When you look at his life, it had a lot to do with his intentional spirituality, also the accountability that was around him and things like that. And so I don't know. I don't know. This is an interesting discussion.
Well, to that end, that actually, you know, leads me pretty nicely to ask the question, and this is one of the final questions, of are there markers in your life that you have? Kind of like, you know, it's almost like a tripwire in your life. Like if this is tripped, you know, like, number one, you're unhealthy. Number two, like, you need to kind of take a look around and see where you are. And then number three, you got to go back to where you came from in order to make sure that you don't go any further, right? Like, do you have any, and, you know, like a lot of our conversations and podcasts is for the lay leader. And this is for like just the regular member. You know, this is one of those things. It's for like the young pastor, right? This is for the young leader who's like getting into ministry, or maybe for the older leader who like is starting to get a little bit lost in where they are, right? So do you guys have any of those kinds of markers in your life, tripwires, where you go like, I'm not healthy right now, so I gotta run back to my accountability? Yep. I gotta run back to my church. Like what are those things for you?
When I hide?
Yeah.
When all I want to do is hide, I know that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, I have my sisters.
And your parents now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, physically hiding, yes. But emotionally or like, you know, just mentally, like, I could put up a front.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I could play it. But then I know, like, inside, all I want to do is crawl in a ball. And when I do that, that's a problem. So I'll say it out loud to the people I trust. You know, I tell them, like whether it be my sisters or I also have friends that I, you know, am very honest with. I'll tell them, like, y'all got to pray for me because. Or, like, yeah, all I want to do is just crawl up in a ball. And, like, my sisters know, like, that's a problem, you know? I think one of the things that I did, I'm thankful that God put me through in the very beginning of my career as a pastor is counseling. I think knowing the having had the benefits of counseling in the way that I did, I know that that is available for me and that's not shameful. Knowing I have something like that to turn to if whatever I'm dealing with becomes too big for other people. You know what I mean? Like, your friends and family are not meant to, I don't think, some things they can't handle. It's not fair, you know, for them to carry that. Because they don't know how, and then I don't want to make them feel hopeless or helpless because of my problems, right? That's why you pay somebody.
Sure.
So, you know, having those precautions in place. And I think another thing I do is I have some friends that I'm very, like, open with, and something, like, we learned in seminary through one of our, professors is keeping your confessions current, right? Like, being very honest with, you know, like having catch-ups and making sure you have some people around you that you can confess the hard things, your sinful things and stuff like that with, so that you can stay accountable. I think those things have been, like, those are the things that are in place currently that I can, like, tap into.
Yeah.
You know.
Husky, what about you?
Man, it's hard because a lot of my... besides some basic things like the pastoral covenant groups, I also have a this thing called the Pastor's Fight Club, where we get, you guys know where that, what that's referencing, right?
Yeah.
Fight Club, the movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just broke its cardinal rule.
Yeah. Why did you just do that?
It's, everybody knows about it. Anyway. And then, you know, just different groups in general. That's helpful. But for me, it boils down to kind of, if I find myself getting anxious, or if I find myself stressed out or worn out, if I find myself falling into temptations, and this and that, if I find myself being extremely self-centered, all those are warning lights for me to be like, you need to check what's going on underneath the hood. But the difficulty is when you're in that place, you don't always see that you need to check underneath the hood because you're so lost. And so it's difficult. And this is where I'll have my wife, you know, she'll kind of, and you got to make a good decision when you pick your spouse, right? And somebody who can do that for you. She's been fabulous at that. And stuff like that. And prayer. Oh yeah. If I'm avoiding scripture, I'm avoiding praying, I know something is up.
Yeah.
And besides that, it's really by the grace of God that he wakes me up sometimes. You know, let me just share something fairly recent. For a good amount of years, I was always like, hey, I really want people on a Sunday when they hear the message to hear the word of God. Like, I want them to encounter God, right? And at a certain point, fairly recently, I kind of lost that. And I was like, okay, that's a warning sign. Something is wrong here. And I saw, I brought it before God. I was really wrestling with it. And it, I don't want to over-psychologize this, but I was struggling with unforgiveness for some time. You know, after the pandemic, because of all the times I've been hurt, or I thought I was being hurt. And I had a breakthrough recently. I realized that I was making ministry all about myself, which is which made the hurt that much more painful. And as I was praying one day, this thought came to mind, like, forgive them because Jesus is your Lord and he loves you and he wants you to forgive them. Do it for him. I was like, oh, I could do that because I love Jesus and he's my Lord and he's telling me forgive these people. And for some reason, that just did it for me. And all these people, I'm just able to forgive. And then at that point, when I made that breakthrough, this desire to really preach so that people would experience more joy in Christ came back, you know? And so I don't know. It's just, you have to be kind of very vigilant about what's going on in here, but that's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
And so I don't really have too many answers to that besides these things.
You know? Yeah. So. Yeah. Hey, I mean, I know that it's a tricky thing. You know, it's like asking the sheep, you know, like, what do you do so that you don't get lost? You know, it's like asking the son, what do you do so that, you know, like, so that you don't ask your father for, you know, your share of the inheritance? And yeah. It's asking the older son, what do you do so that resentment doesn't build up in your heart? Like, these things just sort of happen.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Yeah. They just sort of happen. And, you know, bringing it back to the message, the idea that we could all be lost at any point along the journey, yeah. Right? Like, it's not, you know, the interesting thing about what the parables do, the ones that we explored this past Sunday, at least to me, the interesting thing is that these are not parables only for the lost. These are not parables only for those who are not Christians. In fact, Jesus spoke in parables in order to, like, make sure that those who wouldn't hear anyway would not hear, and that those that could hear, had ears to hear, would be able to hear. Mm-hmm. And if that's not a condition of people that, like, know the word, then I don't know what is, right? So three pastors sitting around a table right now should look at Luke 15 and go, this is not for them, this is for me, right? This is so I know that in case I ever even, if I'm one patch too far away from the shepherd, if I'm one patch of grass too far away from the shepherd, I got to make sure that I start making my way back. Or if I ever get close enough to ask my father for my share of the inheritance, I know pretty well in my heart that I'm not where I should be, and I'm closer to being lost than I am found, right? And, you know, this is, you know, our way of just sort of tying all of these things together. And and it's so funny how the conversation that I had with a friend of mine about this documentary series, about Carl Lentz and about the celebrity pastor, about the mega church pastor who ends up in scandal and all of these things, kind of comes on the heels of a sermon about lost and found. Like, aren't we all in some way, shape, or form, like, in our own journeys of being lost and found? Like, even after Jesus has found us, how much more does he need to find us? How much more do we need to find him, right? And so, yeah, I mean...
yeah, that lost sheep maybe got lost again.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe while the shepherd was getting that one sheep, there were other sheep that were getting lost. It's like this is why, like, the older brother in the parable of the lost son, this is why, like, that for me is one of, like, the really big tragedies of the story. Yeah. It's because, like, anyone could get lost, but that guy thought he was not lost.
Yeah, that's the danger.
And it just set in. Like, how many older sons have just been set in? And it's like, they're not going to know that they're lost, or they're not going to know that they're broken until something just happens that forces them to reckon with it, right?
Yeah.
We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about, like, the conceit of something like, why do I need to concede that I'm broken? How many of us are actually going to concede that we're lost? I dare say none of us.
No.
Until we are confronted by our father, by our accountability or whatever, right? So... I don't know. I just thought it was interesting how it all sort of came together like that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I will say, I mentioned this in the sermon. It's pretty cool how Jesus is so nice to the elder son. Right? Yeah, I mean, you never see... And Jesus is addressing the Pharisees here. And I'm telling you, that passage really threw me for a loop. I'm like, oh my God, Jesus loves these people.
Yeah.
Too. And so even though you can be lost without realizing you're lost, Jesus is still chasing you. And I think that's such a powerful part of that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, good stuff, man, bringing all this together.
You know, it's just food for thought. I don't even know that they're like, that we need to find conclusion. It's just like, you know, I don't know that I have a ton of love lost for Carl Lentz or these other celebrities. I don't know that I feel too bad for them either. Like,
okay.
It's like, I don't know. That didn't happen overnight, and there are plenty of opportunities.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. That's yeah. right. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true, too.
Yeah, so, but I don't know, especially now, I don't know, maybe it's just Tim Keller's passing, and specifically Tim Keller's passing lately. I don't know why it is, but maybe that's just the thing that kind of like makes me think about these things ever more. Like, I want to finish just as well as he did, you know? I think all of us do, really, you know? So yeah, I don't know. Any closing thoughts?
I wish I could compile a list of all those people who finished well and those who didn't.
Sure.
And I would say the ones who finished well, I'm telling you, they're probably more. I think the ones who haven't finished well, it's just a lot of publicity.
Sure.
So I don't know. Just, just a thought.
Yeah, we just like a car crash too, right?
Yeah.
It's like we just...
Most people drive safely.
We can't peel our eyes away from that wreck. And so probably should try to find some kind of, you know, redemptive ending to this. Here's what I'll say.
Okay.
Three of us are on this table, and plenty more elders, deacons, and leaders in our church will make sure that we never get there. And no amount of however many listeners of this podcast will ever like speak louder than the voices of our own accountabilities, right? Like all three of us, we have it, and we're gonna try to hold ourselves to it. Not to mention our partners, not to mention our families, not to mention all of those other things. And so, you know, to the young pastor out there, to the young leader who's like, you know, trying to make sense of all this, that is particularly like held up or kind of, you know, fraught or distraught by, you know, all these stories and megachurch pastors and celebrity pastors that seemingly falter. Here's what I'll say. Our ultimate hope is Jesus, and he's going to lead us where we need to go. And I think that's just it. You just sort of leave it right there and let that be enough, right? So with that, we're going to bring this this podcast to a close. It started weird, and it went weird. It's not always, that weird.
It's always weird.
It's always weird. It's always weird what we're doing. But I do enjoy it, and I do enjoy doing this with my friends. You know, we'll be back next week with another new episode of NMPC Plus. Until then, we hope that you are blessed. And this is NMPC Plus signing off for now.